Hey, what's up?
You there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, awesome.
All right, cool.
Hey, we're fucking cooking with fire, bud.
Cooking with fire.
So,
I am Jason Wazalewski.
For those that don't know the voice that you're hearing other than mine, it's our first class retired David McCray, the man, the myth, the legend, in the flesh. It's just his voice, so it's not the flesh.
On Memorex.
So, in the north, where I'm at right now, I am drinking Labatt Blue Light. I don't know if those go that far south, but...
I am having a Calarasi cognac. So I don't know how you pronounce that, but I'm going to see where this goes.
Yeah. So.
Calarasi. I don't know. I don't know. Jeremy, where's this from?
Romania.
Oh, it's from Romania.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
I'll take it.
Hey, hang on one sec. All right, I'm going to go right
good
out.
Good to go?
Yep, I'm good to go. I'm going to step out in front. Yeah, so, yep, so going on a big fishing trip tomorrow. Can't wait. Cannot wait. And maybe something, something close to your heart up there, which you just informed me that the Cherokee were relatives to some of the nations up your way, right?
Yeah, so earlier today I did an episode about the Iroquois Confederacy, and in that it was saying that the Iroquois probably came here from somewhere else, just because the tribes that were north, south, and east of the Iroquois, the Algonquins, they shared like no similarities, right? Culture, language, I mean, even how they lived, nothing was similar. So they said that the Cherokees had the same language as the Iroquois nation up here. So at probably some point, they were thinking that it migrated up. And then originally, it was five nations. And the sixth nation, the Tuscarora, came from North Carolina sometime probably in like the 15, 1600s. I'm not really sure. But they actually did migrate up. So
wow,
it had to have been probably in the 1600s because apparently they fought some settlers or, whoever the white people were in the South at the time. The first kind of groups, they got their butts whipped, I guess, and they fled to the north up here. So, for those that don't know, McCray lives in North Carolina, so he's actually going trout fishing tomorrow in the Cherokee Reservation. In honor of this podcast, I'll go trout fishing tomorrow in the Iroquois land. So,
yeah. I'll send you pictures. You send me pictures. We'll post them. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
No, but you know.
I remember we went trout fishing there.
Probably Maggie Valley.
Maggie Valley. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. And caught some right there beside that.
Yeah.
You remember? We were catching them right beside of that hotel, and this guy was like, "Y'all catching fish?"
Yeah.
And I was like, "No. He's down here looking at the water, and I'm counting to see how many times he says, man, look at this water."
People do that. People say that to us even here, you know, like right by my house, there's this little stream, and we'll be fishing. And people are like, there ain't no fish in there. I'm like, yeah, you're right. We catch them all the time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They don't, you know, you don't need a lot of water.
No. And that's what's surprising. So if you ever get down here, Waz, or if you use, you know, hashtag, whatever you hashtag, the little history podcast, man, get down here, hit me up. I'll go fishing with you. I know Cherokee pretty good. Man, love it. And it's a proud nation, you know, and they're still around.
You know, I'll tell you that. So, I, you know, living up here, the Oneida Indian Nation's really close. You know, we spend time. Just because we live up here, but like the Oneida Indian Nation, you go through the Onondaga Nation, the Seneca Nation. I would say the Cherokees are definitely I don't want to say they're more proud, but it's much more known when you're on their reservation.
Right. Yes. Yes, it is. And you know,
they're mistaken. When you go into Cherokee territory, you know you're in the Cherokee Nation.
Oh yeah. Yep. And that's not like that up there at all.
It is. But like say like in the Seneca Reservation, right? Like the only reason you kind of know is because there's like tobacco stores and stuff, you know?
Right. Because they get it. It's a different price, right? I guess.
Yeah. So they actually make, I think originally what they're doing is, and now don't quote me, I don't know how accurate this is, but this is kind of what I remember. They were selling cigarettes on the reservation and not paying the New York sin tax.
Ah.
Because it's a sovereign spot, right?
Right.
They don't have to pay New York taxes for certain things. So,
wow.
New York fought it some way, shape, or form, and then they're like, well, that only counts to tobacco that's made on the reservation.
Oh,
so they fired back with, okay, well, we're not going to sell Newports and fucking whatever. We're just going to make our own cigarettes.
Yep.
And they have Senecas.
Yep. Senecas. Yep.
That's how they got away from it. Any type of cigarette you could think of, for the most part, there's a Seneca version of it.
A Seneca version of it. Yep.
Yeah.
Not that here on the Little History Podcast that we condone any type of inhaling of vapors or smoke.
Correct.
We are a kid friendly podcast.
Kid friendly podcast.
Yep. So,
minus the, two times I swore already on this one. I never swear really on the ones when I do by myself, but as soon as I get with you, I don't know. I just don't know how to act.
It's me. I have that animal magnetism. I attract animals. You know what I mean? So you know what's crazy to me? So in my mind, I've been up to upstate New York one time, and I went up to the big Salmon River and did that.
Yeah.
You know, caught like little horny heads and brim when everybody else was catching salmon, because I don't know, just weird. But anyway, but being up there, seeing how stoic and how like the mountains and everything, it's like, you know, everybody that's down south, or everybody, not everybody, people that are down south, they have this misconception of New York is New York City, not the
right.
Beautiful farms and the mountains and, you know, the just the forest and the untapped little nature areas that you can go into. And that's what was blowing me away. You know, so imagine, you know, what was sad though, is when they did The Last of the Mohicans, I guess, I don't know why, and somebody could correct me or whatever, but when they did that movie, they filmed it in close to Cherokee. Because, you know, I guess
I think that's accurate. To be honest with you.
Yeah. Because, you know, I know they did. I don't know exactly where, but I had some buddies that had worked as extras, and, you know, the scene where the Indians are kind of skirting along as the spoiler alert, sorry guys. So the British column is getting released by the French. You know, the French have done their noble thing, and they have let the British leave Fort Stanwyck or whatever it is. This is the French and Indian War.
Yeah.
You know, the Iroquois, you know, native comes up and says, you know, hey, father, you know, I have not bloodied my blade yet. And he says, you will not bloody your blade today, but tomorrow you will find them in another area. So, or, you know, whatever he's to that effect. And what happened is they basically pounced on the column, killed a lot of British soldiers that had been left to be able to go under arms and have a decent, you know, surrender and be able to go back to their lines. But then, you know, the French's allies turn on them and, I mean, almost killed them to a man. And, you know, that's common, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, that stuff is brutal. And, you know, the reason I'm speaking of that, I'm not so much speaking of it as who won, who didn't win or whatever, But you put yourself in that type of situation, you know, could you load a musket, a flintlock musket, and make sure that it fires? Did you keep your flintlock and your pan dry? And did you, you know, are you ready to go into fisticuffs with somebody, hand-to-hand combat? Like, you're looking dead at somebody in the eye, and, you know, where do you put your tomahawk so you know that when you pull it off your hip, you're going to make a deadly strike? You know, just stuff like that. When you start thinking of it, man. Whew. It's like,
and that's like, I love the movie The Patriot.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Because although it's fiction,
right?
I mean, they say in there's so many accuracies. Like,
yeah,
the person that they even made is the combination of two people. But
right,
when he was in there, he's playing somebody that fought in the French and Indian War,
right,
which was a savage time.
Terrible.
There are no
savage
rules. There was no rules.
No.
There was no Geneva Convention. There was no press reporting what's happening.
Right.
It was literally life or death every day.
Yep. And, you know, something that I like is when we do the war game, and or if we talk about, like, game, you know, where we would have different factions or whatever. Everybody usually wants to just be like, oh, yeah, we'll be the Americans, whatever. My son, Matthew, keeps hitting me up. It's all right.
Tell Matthew you're busy.
I know, I'm trying to. But yeah, but you know what I'm saying? So, you know, put yourself in that situation. Even if you play, let's just say, Risk, okay? You're one of the five nations. You're one of the six nations. During this time, you have upheaval. Now you have French, you have British, you have, you know, the colonists, you know, that are, some of them are French, some of them are British, some of them are not, whatever. But they're sitting there now, you're vying to go, which side do I go with? Thinking,
yep,
that you can, you know, every, you know, history is always written by the people that, you know, win. That's the way it always,
yeah,
is.
Earlier today on my,
yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, you know, everything, whew, that stuff is harsh. I mean, just, you know, I'm just saying, like, to your listeners, if they ever get a chance to look at some of the different drawings and depictions that people have done, different artists have done, like of the French and Indian, or, you know, the time, the troubles that we had during the Revolution, after the Revolution, you know, the river rising, and just a lot of the different, you know, battles like that, you know, you had people that had to cast their lot with somebody. And then by the time the War of 1812 come around, you know, Upper Canada is basically right outside of Detroit, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, and what, and then, you know, you get the notorious effect of, hey, we promised to do this for you. Right.
What do we get? Where is our,
yes,
reap?
Yes.
Where's our reward that we're supposed,
yep,
to reap?
And then what happens? Well, you gave us what you were supposed to, but you know what? We're not really going to hold up our bargain. Not saying that we've done it before, but we have sure as hell have done it in the past. And, you know, with the, if you look at the Kurdish, you know?
Yeah. I mean, oh, yeah, for sure.
I mean, really? I mean, that is the guy that's standing in your corner, you're bleeding, you're puking up blood, and he's over there wiping you off, and you're spitting in his face, and he's like, oh, it's good, thank you, mister, you know? And anytime we get in a scrape, those guys are right there, which is, I mean,
yeah,
I want to tell you what, man, Kurds know how to fight, you know? Hey, prove me wrong.
That was one of the things I disagreed with, not to get off topic, but with the Trump administration, where they kind of just turned their backs on the Kurdish.
Right.
I thought that was kind of,
yep,
that was a bad move.
Yep.
I mean, they had a referendum in, like, what, 2017, and they voted like 98% for basically independence from Iraq and to form their own country of Kurdistan.
Yep.
I think really the only people mad at that are Turkey and Iraq.
Yep. And Iran. Iran too.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, but you talking about some lions? Yeah. You get in a fight, you got Israel and some Kurds with you, you'll take over the world, baby.
Well, I was actually reading today on that. they were saying that it was the Zionist influence is the reason that they voted 98% in favor of independence. Right. And that, and it was just, you know, propaganda pushed by Turkey.
Oh, yeah.
Because they don't want the YPG or YPK, whatever it is, running around. But at the same time, like, that's their area.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, so you can reflect back on, like, what happened to a lot of the different groups, you know, that we, you know, we had, you know, we manipulated. I mean, that's, I mean, there's no other reason. Yeah. I mean, there's no other thing that we could say. And
just to play devil's advocate, though, like, nationalism is dangerous.
Yeah. Yep.
So at the same time, is, you know, although you have a region, say Kurdistan, that they're ethnic Kurds, you know, at what point is nationalism of that type wanting that counterproductive? But at the same time, it's hard for me to even play devil's advocate because they were persecuted and
we turned our back.
Just like Israel, it's like, what do you you can't say the same thing to say. Though, you know, to Jews, if you say, hey, you just have to assimilate into the cultures you're with, they're just going to get persecuted wherever they're
right.
at.
Right. Yep.
They can't live in the Middle East unless they're in their own country defending themselves. Yep. The Kurds are going to be the same way.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, look at it. I mean, we did. I mean, I was there. I was in the army then. We turned our back. Yep. We turned our back on them. And what happened? Saddam takes some damn helicopters up there and kills thousands of them. With some damn bullshit chemicals, you know, kids, women. You can look it up. I mean, it's common knowledge, you know. But yeah, but that's the guy that we.
What do you? How many was it? How many was 100,000 Kurds?
Oh, it's yeah. I mean, it's.
Or was it more?
I don't know, but I know they took it on the chin, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't know the exact, but I mean, just, you know, I mean, and that's, man, that's like. You know, line of your heritage, you know, I mean, just takes out whole communities and whole, you know, and that's why, you know, when people were first against, like, anything going on with Saddam, like, to get rid of him or, you know, execute him, you know, I was like, that's crazy. They just don't even understand. This guy didn't give two shits. I know we're very off topic. I'm sorry, man.
No, it's good, though. I mean, it's important because it's also something for people to think about because people don't think about this stuff.
Right, right.
And when you look at the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, which you fought in Iraq, I went to Afghanistan, it's easy for somebody now in 2021 to say it was a waste of time or it was bullshit, it was for oil or something like that. But in reality, it's like, at the end of the day, on the Iraq side, you got rid of a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Who used chemical weapons on an ethnic group and committed genocide.
Yep.
Who would do it any day of the month, given the opportunity.
Yep.
Right? Right. Like there's people that now don't have to wear, you know, or females can walk in the streets without having to be completely covered up and go to school.
Right.
Like, that's a win. And, like, you know, the whole pullout of Afghanistan, we're still in Japan.
Yeah, and
we're still in Germany. Everyone's like, well, what are we doing? It's 20 years in a war. Every place that we've ever been, we're still there.
Can you say North Korea? I would like to have soju, please.
Yeah, we've never ended that. That war's never ended. And people are like, wow, what are we doing? It's 20 years. Like, okay, first off, I was always told, break it, you own it.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And if you want it to stay how you want it, you have to stay there. We still have a presence in Japan since 1945. Yep. Germany, 1945. Yep. Italy, 1945.
Yep.
We still have armored divisions just sitting on the border waiting to just blast freaking M1 Abrams munitions across.
And what has the red, white, and blue done? It has changed over three quarters of the Warsaw Pact to democracy.
Yeah.
Fuck you, Stalin. Oh, sorry.
Poland, Ukraine, the Baltic states.
Sorry, Stalin. I didn't mean to say that bad word, but yeah. America.
Well, that was another thing, too. I was like, I've been talking about it all week, and this one, this civilian that works in my office, he always asks me what's the update in the morning. There's 80,000 Russian troops on the Ukrainian border.
Yeah. Yeah, what is that about?
People don't realize how significant that number is.
That's scary.
That would be that's like taking 10th Mountain Division out of Fort Drum and the 82nd out of
Fort Bragg,
plus the Special Forces guys down there, and then adding like Fort Lee.
And putting them right there in California.
Yeah, putting them all on the border of like Nevada.
Yeah. Fuck you, California. Let's roll.
Like, that's bases worth of people.
Yeah. Damn. How are they sustaining them, man? How long have they been over there?
I don't know. So, the first update I saw was like a week ago. There was 10,000, which was significant. That's a big number. And then it went from 10,000 to like 40 to 80 within the course of like a week. But not only was it the manpower, but they also shipped the tanks, trucks, everything. Logistically, like, hands off to them.
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably an exercise. I can't imagine that they're going to actually invade the Ukraine. But, you know, they also – the U.S. was going to put two ships in the Black Sea, and Russia said don't do it. And today the U.S. said they're not doing it.
Yeah,
so
but
it's
what
like,
else happened today?
What is happening?
Sanctioned the hell out of Russia. Just
sanction them hard,
I mean, I don't even know.
Spell some diplomats.
Yeah, I don't even think. Like, I was going to try to get some knockoff miniatures from, like, the place I usually get them from over there in Russia. But now he's, like, charging me, like, 600 ruples, man. I am not paying $3 for a knockoff G.I. Joe. I don't care whose money it is, buddy. Yeah, I know, Dimitri. I know you're out there. You can hear me. I'm not paying it, buddy. Back to 2 ruples.
I was more worried about, I mean, so I've always been the kind of the thought that, like, with Russia, right, their GDP is like 33rd in the world, right? Their military is overly not that big. Technology wise, they're not super advanced. You know, they don't have a Gen 5 fighter. They don't have, I mean, their armor is pretty legit. I think, what's it, the T-42?
T-90. But it,
is that what they're on now?
T-90s, but the thing about it is, like, they only got 3 crew members, you know? And if you're a tanker out there, listen, you can tell me that, yes, it was an issue, you know, you got a tank commander has to go off to meetings and beat and greets and go get food and all that other stuff. So then you got 2 Joes trying to fix a tank. No, U.S. Army, you got 3 Joes out there doing that fixing. That automatic loader is shit. Yeah, that's just my take on it. Prove me wrong.
But I know, but so other than that, the reason they're legitimate is because they're one of the 5 UN Security Council members. Right? So they have a say. That's the reason they have a say. That's it. They have veto ability. And when it comes to anything, because they have veto ability, all they could just say is no. So, of course, they're going to side with anybody that we aren't agreeing with because it makes them relevant. I was more concerned with the whole China-Taiwan thing that's been kind of transpiring over the past couple years, but
I mean, damn, kudos to somebody that can just build a damn island. I mean, you don't see America going out there like, hey, guys, guess what? Today, all right, I know a bunch of you guys can't swim, but in 4 days, I'll have land made for you, okay?
Just in 4 days, I'll have an operating runway on an island in the middle of the ocean.
That's the thing. I'm just like, hey, what? hey, what's up, Jamaica? We're just going to shave off a couple of your mountains and make an airstrip. My bad.
Yeah, we're just gonna somehow dredge dirt from, you know, a mile below sea, pile it up, and then we're just gonna land planes on.
I mean, really, literally, who goes out in the Mariana Trench and goes, guess what, guys? We're gonna put enough pipe down there, and we're gonna dredge the bottom of that son of a bitch, and we're gonna make an island. You know who can do it? Chung Fang Gu. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, when you got a billion people,
Chinese,
you know.
Virus.
They're going to hack your phone tonight, probably.
Please don't do it. Sorry, guys. Sorry. I do love General Chow's chicken and Hunan chicken, but just not spicy. Not spicy.
No, I don't like spicy either. But so talking about, I guess, oppressive regimes and things similar. Joseph Brandt.
Yeah.
Right. Some people know the name. I can't pronounce his Indian name, so I'm not, or his Native American name, so I'm not even going to try it. But Joseph Brandt, big figure, Revolutionary War. Not necessarily on, for good reasons, but so I was doing some research on this guy today. Believe it or not, he went to a college that was meant for Native Americans at the time, a little bit before the war. Do you know what college that is now?
Syracuse.
It was not Syracuse.
Okay, I don't know,
but
shit. I just guessed. I thought it was a good guess.
Yeah, no, it was a good guess. So, Brandt was, let's see. Brandt was converted to an Anglican in 1761, so we're talking 15 years before the revolution. But he was also only, he was born in 1742, so he was what, he was 19 years old. He's converted to he was Anglican church follower. Christianity. So he went to this one school that whoever did it, it was a British family. They had opened this school for Indians in Lebanon, Connecticut. And they would teach them English. They would teach them Western history and literature. And he became an interpreter for this school and also for the Anglican missionary at the time. And he, you know, spread the word throughout the Mohawk and the Iroquois nation. The school that he ultimately went to for college is now Dartmouth. Yeah.
Who would have thunk it?
Not me, honestly.
Me neither. I guess Syracuse.
Yeah. I mean, it's close. It's not that far from each other. But so you got this guy, Brandt, who's running around, you know, preaching the word of the Lord to the nation of the six Iroquois. And when fighting kind of kicked off, Brandt was a loyalist.
Very much.
Yep. From the start. I mean, they put him in school. They taught him stuff. Brandt knew like five languages. He spoke Latin, English, whatever language that his tribe spoke, German, French, something else. Obviously super intelligent, but nonetheless, the reason that Brandt was a loyalist was because he knew that if the British was in charge, that there would never be a North American country that was run by white people. He knew that they were just using this as a cash cow. They weren't going to settle, you know, the entire country or the entire landmass at the time. The British were just going to have this as a colony. And if it was a colony, the natives wouldn't really be that inconvenienced. And at the same time, they would be able to at least control their land borders and stuff. So, this, you know, the Revolutionary War kicks off, and the six nations collectively decide that we are not going to pick sides. If you want to pick sides, knock yourself out. But you know, the council has spoken, we're not choosing. Well, the other five chose the British side, and the only one that did not was the Oneidas. So you had five of the six tribes side with the British, and then you had the one go with the colonists. Sorry, I was just laughing. I got text messages unrelated to this, but it made me laugh. But
I was looking into camera, and I was like, can he see me? And then he started laughing, and I was like, oh, shit. Oh, my goodness.
But so Brant was a Mohawk, right? He was a Mohegan. And like you said, it was some pretty brutal stuff. Yeah. But in my episode earlier, the Mohegans were like the most ruthless of the six nations. That was a given. And when I was reading this stuff, like kind of just, you always hear this guy, Joseph Brant, but you're like, he must be a white person. His name's Joseph Brant, but that's what the Europeans called him. That was his English name, was Joseph Brant. He had fought for the British in the last French and Indian War, so 1754 to 63. He was 13 when he first started fighting. So he's 13 years old during the French and Indian War. Probably has countless bodies on his record. You know? So now the guy, you know, you fast forward to the Revolution, he's, what, 30? 30. He's 35. He's 34 when the Revolution kicks off. That's on
basically the alter image of the gentleman in the Patriot.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It would be his adversary counterpart. You know, someone who's just, you know, a leader, right? Because the guy in the Patriot was a local leader, and Brant was a local leader.
He had done a lot of crazy and some despicable but somehow justified things in the French.
But because he did that, he had the respect of the people that were behind him.
So when
shit hit the fan, he did what he had to do, and it was enough to where when he approached the other, the other nations in the Confederacy, that they sided with him. And they said, you know what, you're right. As long as the British colonize this area, I think we'll have our own stuff.
And if you really look at it, so if you look at it from the perspective of The Last of the Mohicans, the movie, you're actually basically should be rooting for Magua and the French father, you know, because guess what?
Yeah.
In a few years, they're going to be your allies. So, you know, when he cracked that, you know, that one guy and all hell broke loose, maybe, you know, we should have been on board a little bit earlier.
Well, that's like in The Patriot when the French guy's there, you know, he says, he's like, I was there when
I was there when a British men of war attacked us under a flag of truce.
Yeah.
Tell me, was that fair? Thank you.
That sounded pretty good.
Thank you. I'm a thespian, everybody. Thespian.
Thespian of the year. I've
got two movies under my belt. One was Union Bound, and the other one, I can't remember the name of it. I don't know. Yeah, Outward Bound or something. I don't even know, man. jump and be proud with it, I think. I don't know. But, yeah, look them up under David D. McCray.
IMBD.
Especially after tonight.
Whew.
Yeet, yeet.
So Washington, if you look at mountvernon.org, so what's that? That's Washington's library.
Yeah.
I'm not going to read this verbatim because I don't want it right now. What the fuck is this? My phone. I'm showing this.
I don't know. It sounds like a robot, right?
Yeah, every time it vibrates.
It's like, but I keep looking like, damn, so, is that a camera focusing in on me?
Yeah, like, what's happening?
But I guess it's not. Yeah, okay.
So Washington had wrote about Brandt a bunch of times from, like, 1778 into 1779.
Yeah.
So up here, General Schuyler, right? So General Schuyler, I live in Frankfort, but the school district I live in is Frankfort Schuyler. Right. So Schuyler's, you know, 5 minutes north of me.
Right.
Everything's named after Revolutionary War people here, apparently. Yeah. But rightfully so. He wrote to him. So in 1778, he complained to General Schuyler about Brandt's considerable mischief on the northeast corner of Pennsylvania. So apparently Brandt was going through and just messing up northern Pennsylvania.
Right. All the way, just all the way from the bases and, you know, of the Adirondacks and coming down. Maybe
everything. Oof. Tearing it up.
Yeah.
Scalping, whatever. They weren't messing around. I mean, there's still some of those. It was really during the French and Indian War, but if you go to some of these spots up here, like Fort Plain, I want to say like Fort Plain, Canajoharie. There's still some of those places that had these raid shelters that when you thought that the natives were raiding, you'd go into this bunker.
Right. Yep.
And it had like gun ports on it, and you just shove your musket out and shoot.
Yep. Reinforced into a blockhouse.
Yep. Yep. There's still a bunch of those up here sitting around.
Really? That's cool.
Yeah.
Now, close
to, you could go
close to Statesville, North Carolina. They have done a reproduction of that because basically, from like if you shot an azimuth going from north to south from your direction down my way, you would almost from your areas of that time would be almost on line with what, you know, was the farthest reaches of North Carolina, which was around Salisbury. Or not Salisbury, but Statesville, excuse me. Statesville, North Carolina. And, you know, and so they've recreated. So it's like a little out of the way spot, but they've recreated like the blockhouse kind of area around there. And it really looks really cool, you know. That's why I would love to go, you know, from where you're at up and just like all the different, like the different battles and the General Herkimer and all the stuff that you've told me about it, you know. I love that stuff.
Yeah, it's cool that up here down in the South, you know, the Civil War trumped the Revolution, right? Right,
yeah.
Because a lot of the battles down there were the Civil War. So when you talk about history, it's all Civil War stuff down there. But up here, you know, there was no Civil War battle spot in upstate New York in the Mohawk Valley.
Right, yeah.
Right. And they were probably the farthest from really knowing what even happened in the Civil War at the time.
Right.
They were just there reading in the papers. But if you follow, you know, the I-90 corridor, which is the New York State Thruway, and if you go between exit, you know, like, say, like 31, 27, 28, every, you know, you're going to see those. They're blue signs with yellow writing up here. And that's, like, a significant thing, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Whether it's a Herkimer House or Fort Clock is one of them. The Arisville Shrine, I'm not exactly sure what it is. They used to make us go there when we were younger in, like, religion class.
Uh-huh.
Let me look it up quick because I felt like it was important, but.
Yeah, and that's the thing, man. When people go and you check out history and it, like your local history, man, just the creek or the road. Why is the road where you live at? You know, why is it named whatever? You know, just check it out. Because, man, you know, at the end of the day, we all have to deal with each other. So it is what it is.
So it makes sense that they would make us go here, right? Because I was raised Catholic, so. Uh-huh. The Shrine of Our Lady of Martyrs is located in Arisville, which is the Arisville Shrine, and it is now a Roman Catholic shrine dedicated to three Jesuit missionaries who were martyred here. which means they were murdered.
So during the French and Indian time, a little bit before?
The building pictures look about that.
So just imagine. So you're calling.
Says 17th century. And they were murdered by ultimately the Mohegans.
So you're called from a life of piety in the slums of London, and you grab your wife and you go to the New World, and you know what? You're going to spread the word. Well, sometimes it wasn't too cool because, you know, and without getting into religion, but man, you know, you're talking about a leap of faith. You know, what kind of faith did these people have? Yep. And you know, they're on the outskirts. They're not even close to a town or a city, you know? That's what's crazy.
Yeah. So why is, and you might know this because I don't, but why is it always the Jesuit priests are the ones doing these like insane missionary trips? What is it? What's the significance?
I don't know if it's a penance. You know, I don't know. Somebody else can maybe chime in and let us know. But man, you know, I mean, how do you do that? How do you say, okay, well, this is what I'm going to do? And I guess
I'm going to go into a land of people who don't want me here, and similar to Jehovah's Witnesses.
I thought you were going to say army troops because it's kind of sounding like us.
Yeah.
That's why I kept going, it sounds just like what we did. Yeah, okay. All right, whatever. You know, it is what it is.
Yesterday we were driving around and we call it spread the word, right? In recruiting, we spread the word. And we're driving around and New York just legalized marijuana.
Everybody?
Yeah, it's like recreational now.
In New York.
New York State, yeah. I don't know. So I don't know the rollout of it.
Don't get us excited.
But I could tell you that yesterday, every person that we stopped and talked to on the street was smoking.
No way.
So my buddy was in the car with me, and we were driving, and he's like, dude, I think we had a better chance to, like, if we pull up on him and, like, hey, you ever think about joining the National Guard? And they say, no. He's like, oh, okay. I'm actually a Jehovah's Witness. Like, you might have a better chance of getting them to go that way.
No, you got to do like, hey, you got to do like what they did back in the day, man. You know what I mean? If we needed like sailors, we didn't just go, hey, we're going to give you 5 pibs and your chances of getting killed, you know, are probably really, really high. No. We were like, oh, hey, let's get drunk. I want to tell you something cool stories. Yeah. Oh, yeah, you're in? Okay, let's go get on the ship. Boom, bye. That's what we need to do. That's what recruiting needs to go to, man. Hey. Go play to their favorites, man.
Well, that's the problem.
Put your store right beside of the damn best dispensary ever and have, like, people in there, like, bitches of Bob Marley in a uniform. No shit. Boom. Wait a minute. This is happening. Live, everybody.
That's not a bad idea, honestly. Bob Marley
rolling a big fatty saying one love. You know, we're getting, look, hey. We're not
Uncle Sam.
Army. We're not over there kicking people in the teeth. No, we are leaving Afghanistan. We are leaving Iraq. We are back home chilling, you know, just like what we used to do. They're going to bring back the black boots, so you have to shine them. Whatever, make up some story and shit'll work, you know? What do you think? Yeah,
I like it.
So, make it.
Especially because the most common response when, and I don't know who created this, whoever did this on social media, to like one recruiter was like, "I'm not dying for oil company."
Oh, wow.
It's like wow, okay, that's how retarded you are. Because last time I checked, we're one of the major exporters
and,
of oil.
And you know what? If you're going to be like that, take off everything you have on, all the way down to your earbuds.
Everything made of petroleum-based products.
You got to take a shower and use a lye to get all the petroleum-based products. Hey, might as well kissing away, because your teeth are going to fall out because you can't brush them, some bitches. But, you know, hey, is that right?
Yeah, no more lipstick for you.
Meth. You might as well go ahead and just break down into meth. Damn. I just see a bunch of people going, I was listening to the show. I was listening to the show. What were you doing? Josh, yeah. What were you doing? I was listening to the show, and Wazlewski, he said, meth. And I was like, all right, yeah. Damn. That's terrible. Jesus. Fucking frequent flyers, man. Taking them in. Hey, why did y'all have to wake me up? What do you mean? I was on the other side, man. I used the last of my $10. I know they probably put some embalming fluid in it, but man, I was on the other side. You know, yeah.
I was there.
Oof, that was ugly. These were the ugly ones.
That's like the Canadian Army actually could smoke weed.
No shit.
Yeah, so I don't know how many years ago it was. It wasn't it wasn't that long ago, but when Canada made it recreation, it was legal recreational. They enforced kind of like the drinking laws that we have in the military for cannabis. Right.
Okay, boys, here's the deal, okay? You guys can go out and play hockey. You can go get your beers, do whatever. But if you're smoking the weed, if you're doing the devil's lettuce, do not come back in here stony-eyed, because I don't want to check nobody. Everybody got me, okay? All right.
Roger, Sergeant. Roger, Sergeant.
There you go. All right. Yeah, that's a Canadian, like, damn, I'm 50. I want to go join the Canadian Army.
I tell you what, I fuck with the Canadian guys, man.
Yeah? They do a lot of yelling, too, man. I don't know why.
Yeah, the Canadian, they're legit. They're legit.
They all look like lumberjacks. Yeah, you can grow a damn beard and shit.
So there's a platoon of them that live in, like, not down the street, but they live in Rome, New York, which is, like, 20 minutes from here.
Really? Why?
Yeah, so Eastern Air Defense is in Rome.
Oh, okay. As long as they're legit.
So, yeah, they're legit.
I get it. I don't care. I like Canadian bacon. But, you know, when they start encroaching on the good old U.S. of A.
Yeah, I'll put all my garbage over there.
Yeah, okay. I got you. Okay, I got it. All right.
No, I'm
cool. All right.
I mess with them though. They're the Canadian guys, the Canadian soldiers and airmen are cool.
I just don't understand.
Hang out too.
I don't get it.
But they
don't get why they apologize.
No, they don't apologize. They know their place too, though. It's like we need each other.
And it's funny, like if they do a wrestling match, it's like, oh God, did I really hurt you, Johnny? And Johnny be like, yeah, man, you hurt me bad. He's like, well, I don't give a fuck, but yeah, I'm sorry. Wow, you know, another one. There's two more Bakers, you know, bam, bam.
Yeah, but sometimes, you know, you get the other countries, like, you know, they don't like America, but they take all of our money anyway.
Oh, you're not talking about anybody from India or Pakistan or no one like that? No.
Yeah.
I hate fucking curry, man.
Here's $5.
Tell me why people like curry. It's almost like if you lick the devil's butthole, and he farted at the same time, because you get that little backlash. I never got curry. I don't get curry.
I've never got curry either, to be honest with you.
Because, I mean, I see it, and you think, hey, it might be okay. But, man, once you try to eat it, ugh. What do you put on? You can't even put ketchup on it. Damn.
I know what curry is.
I don't know. Yeah, prove us wrong.
I know what it is. I know it's spice, and, like, I just don't even
I don't know
what.
I'm afraid to go to a Hindu place, man, because they'd be telling me some shit about some damn monkey and heads getting cut off. And
I used to go to this Ethiopian place when I was in North, when I lived in Charlotte.
Two pieces of rice, but hey, I've been here all week.
I mean, basically, it was just like flatbread, and you just eat the stuff with it. But there was the only place that would be open in my neighborhood past 9:30 at night.
When so you had if the you monkeys wanted to- when you were the civilian, Wasilewski, Jason, one each.
Yeah, so if you want to eat past 9:30, you got to go eat over there. And they'd always look at me when I'd walk in.
Hello, you know, Mr. Jason. Are you fucked up? Come on, I got the cabbage for you.
Jeez. Just trying to eat, guys. That's all. I'm just trying to have dinner.
Trying to eat. This guy. Man. Hey, what is this called?
What?
Yeah. It's called Kalarash.
Moldovan brandy.
Moldovan brandy.
So get the oldest.
Shout out to our Moldovan counterparts.
Get the oldest shoe in a 5-block area.
Lupescu. Shout out to the Lupescu family.
There you go. Hey. So get the oldest shoe in 5 blocks. The oldest one. I mean, from way back. Even if somebody's still wearing it. Take and put 2 pounds. So, of corn in the shoe with a pound of sugar, 16 grams of malt, and 2 bags of sulfur spores. You bury that shit for a week, and you've got the worst tasting shit ever.
Did you ever watch that guy on Facebook? He's bald. He travels to all these countries, all like the whole, you know, third world hole in the wall countries.
Oh, he's got like the accent.
Yeah.
And he's like, he goes into like the $5 freaking hotel. It's like a bed.
Yeah. So he went to Moldova, and he asked the old people if they liked it better being in the Soviet Union.
Oh God.
Or being independent. Right. And all the old people are like, oh, we liked it better when we're in the Soviet Union. And he asked them why, and they're like, well, at least then there was work and you had a bigger government over us. He's like, as soon as Moldova became independent, all the leading people were corrupt.
Yeah.
I mean, it's gotten significantly better, but
I don't know, man.
I mean, the 90s in the Eastern Bloc must have been like the hardest place to live.
Yeah, it was. That's a lot.
I mean, Eastern Europe must have been the toughest place to live in the 1990s.
Well, if you want to get a good look of what it looked like, all you have to do is go to Berlin. Pankow and some of those places. And that's literally like Eastern Bloc buildings and...
Not to dig too deep too into like Yugoslavia, because I really want to do a whole episode on that, but I mean, talk about a clusterfuck.
Yeah. But you got to remember, with all that, you know, everything that goes back with the hierarchies and the commands and the, you know, the ability to take sway over people, you know. I mean, you had people that were made into icons because, you know, they were their ability to stop Genghis Khan, their ability to stop, you know, the encroachment of, you know, Muslims, you know, and people become, you know, our worst nightmares and our, you know. You know, our best friends, you know?
Yeah.
No. We done got a ghost out here. We are close to the devil's stomping ground in this part of North
Carolina. Or is that Georgia?
No, we're in North Carolina.
Isn't that Georgia?
No, devil's stomping grounds is in North Carolina.
Where?
Close to Cameron, North Carolina.
Wow. Why is that? What's the significance of that?
Oh, the devil's stomping grounds is a place where nothing will grow. Nothing will grow in a circle. But we were just sitting here talking, and they haven't had anything on this fire for, what, 2 days?
No, we had some earlier.
Yeah. But the fire pit just lit up, like.
The log went.
Yeah. Burst into flames. So I was like, wow, devil's tromping ground, you know? But yeah, I mean.
It's definitely your presence. Your presence would do that.
The alcohol from my buttocks, maybe. I don't know.
Was that drink that bad?
No,
poor Tony. I hope Tony's sleeping so she don't got to deal with you.
No, she doesn't. I got to pick her up tomorrow because we're leaving to go to Cherokee. But I'm fine. Bam. Yep.
Well, go get your sleep. Good episode.
All right, man. Well, take care.
Yeah, send me some pictures tomorrow. I'll send you some pictures. Hopefully I can catch some trout so I don't look like an idiot.
Yeah, you got to actually use something to measure it, not just saying, hey, this is really 1 inch and showing us something that I don't even know what it is. All right. Got to use a proper scale.
I'll do your method. I'll throw some corn. I'll throw some corn out there.
You throw some corn. See, I told you today. Ask the Cherokee, you know. All right, man. Later.
All right, I'll talk to you.
Later.